commendation from the referee and the degree of discipline that should be considered by this court as part of this entire proceedings. We submit to you that the violations that have been addressed are minimal in nature, and that any payments, any need for restitution have been already accomplished and have been completely taken care of. There will be a discussion toward the end regarding a direction from the referee for the payment of interest, but we are here today to talk about the degree of discipline. As you consider this matter, I ask the court to consider some of the provisions that are found in the preamble to the Wisconsin Rules of Professional Conduct. The preamble to the rules say, the rules of professional conduct are rules of reason. The preamble says that many of the lawyers' professional responsibilities are prescribed by the rules. However, a lawyer is also guided by personal conscience and the examples of professional peers. The preamble also says, within the framework of the rules, many difficult issues of professional discretion can arise. Such issues must be resolved through the exercise of sensitive, professional, and moral judgment guided by the basic principles underlying the rules. These principles include the lawyer's obligation to zealously protect and pursue a client's legitimate interests within the bounds of the law, while maintaining a professional, courteous, and civil attitude toward all persons involved in the legal system. We ask you to give great consideration to those words of the preamble as we look at this case and as you assess what is the appropriate discipline that should be issued to Attorney Drock. Now, who is Attorney Drock? Attorney Drock is a lawyer in Wausau who's practiced for 44 years. He's engaged almost exclusively in elder law practice, representing clients in estate planning matters, elder law considerations, trust considerations, placement considerations. These are the clients that Attorney Drock represents, and he has represented hundreds and thousands of different clients. What we have today is two clients out of those hundreds or thousands that are complaining not about the services that they received. There's no complaint at all about payments from either of the clients. What there are complaints about, and you can read this throughout the record, there are complaints by family members as to how they were treated by other family members. That's the underpinning of these two cases. That's the underpinning of these two objections to how the fees and how the distributions were made by Attorney Drock pursuant to the proper objectives, the proper goals and considerations of the client. what we are really discussing in this case is progressive discipline. The Office of Lawyer Regulation claims that progressive discipline should be issued to Attorney Drock. Now, let's first look at progressive discipline. I've dealt with the concept of progressive discipline my entire career because it is a standard that is typically applied when dealing with employment types of cases. And I operate under a theory. While I admit this theory is not written in any particular case, it's a theory that has served me very well as I have advised clients about the concept of progressive discipline. And that is that progressive discipline at some stage in a life becomes stale. It no longer carries the weight, the importance of moving on that progressive steps process of progressive discipline. What is the history here of discipline to Attorney Drock? There is a public reprimand from 2002, 18 years ago, involving conduct that occurred in 1995 and did not relate in any way to the issues that are brought forward by the Office of Lawyer Regulation regarding the fee rule. The public reprimand in 2002 principally focused on conflicts of interest. We submit to you that that discipline is stale, not only because of the time, but because of the fact that it does not have a relationship to the issues raised by the Office of Lawyer Regulation in these counts. The other discipline is from 2008, for conduct that occurred before that time. That was a private reprimand relating to an instance where a disgruntled employee of the Drock law firm decided to take some steps in witnessing a document, knowing that that was inappropriate, and sending it to the client for signature. Now, OLR seems to suggest that, well, that's connected because it involved supervision of an employee. I again ask you to consider the preamble and the statements that are in the preamble. And I ask you as well to consider that the issues in these two counts relate to compliance with the fee rule, whereas the private reprimand in 2008 had nothing to do as it relates to fees. Had everything. Yes.
You're saying to us that when it comes to progressive discipline, you think that this court should only impose it when the issues are the same in the subsequent types of cases? And I know we haven't limited it to that, but that's what you're proposing to us that we do?
What I'm proposing to the court is that when you deal with what I think is the appropriate concept of something being stale, you have to look at the time and you have to look at the nature of the violations the fact situation of those violations and then determine what's reasonable going forward. In this particular case, I believe that the time and the elements of the prior discipline cause those prior disciplines to be stale as it relates to these two matters. More importantly, as I've begun to discuss and will now focus on, what is most important here is the reasonable steps taken by Attorney Drock in dealing with these client-sensitive situations, which I think needs to be considered by this court, which I do not think that the referee gave sufficient consideration to when looking at all of the facts of these two violations. And what am I referring to, justices? We are dealing in both of these cases with instances where clients, or in one case, the representative of the client, was on her deathbed. In the Paschalk matter, all of the planning that was done was under the anticipation, the client's objectives, that Anita would live longer than Ray Sr. And when the client came in to the Drock Elder Law Center and did that planning, that was the objectives of the plan. Well, what happened? Things changed, like life changes. And Anita became very ill. And Attorney Drock was called upon to meet in an emergency setting to address the objectives of the representation and make changes. And they tried to do so. Unfortunately, Anita passed before that could all be accomplished. And what went forward from there was representation of Ray Sr. through the trustee Ray Jr. to accomplish the best objectives for Ray Sr., recognizing that everything changed. What were the circumstances of the Larson, the Goldie Larson representation? Attorney Drock worked directly with Jane Teeley, the trustee. Jane Teeley had her desires to protect the interests of her mother and was concerned about the potential of sister Janet E. imposing herself upon the mother. Well, life changed. Jane Teeley was on her deathbed, and Attorney Drock was called to her deathbed to make sure that he was handling the trust most appropriately according to the wishes of Jane Teeley, representing Goldie Larson. Attorney Drock took the necessary steps to ensure that everything was set up. Upon the passage of Jane Teeley, Janet E. became the trustee, and Goldie Larson was moved out of the community, and the representation did not continue. OLR says there were violations of the fee rule in that matter because Attorney Drock didn't talk to Jane Teeley on her deathbed regarding the change in the rates for the representation. These are the things that occurred in these two instances where Attorney Drock had to provide representation within the bounds of the law, maintaining a professional, courteous, and civil attitude as he provided that representation.
Counsel, do I understand you correctly that the $1,540 restitution to Pasholt has been paid?
That is correct, Chief Justice.
And do I understand you correctly that $1,204 has been repaid to Larson's?
The $1,200 has not been repaid to Larson. In the Larson case, the concern here was the rate that was used for the providing of services at the time of Jane Teeley's untimely death. We do not agree that there should be payment of interest or payment of fees. What Attorney Drock did was continued the representation to try and accomplish the goals of Jane Teeley as she passed, and properly completed the necessary paperwork. But then Goldie Larson was moved out of the community and came under the trusteeship of Janet E.
Okay, so do I understand you correctly, then the $1,204 has not been paid because it is your client's belief that that was for services rendered and accepted. So there isn't a payment that's due? I'm not quite following what you're telling me.
We have two positions regarding that matter, okay. Chief Justice. Position number one is that the services were rendered. The services were rendered under very difficult and challenging circumstances at the then billing rates for Attorney Drock. Two, there was never any request or claim by the Office of Lawyer Regulation for a suggestion of the repayment of these funds. There's a due process argument from the referee deciding that there should be some sort of repayment of those monies, when that was never a matter brought before the referee by the Office of Lawyer Regulation.
And okay, so this is something that Kinney came up with? Is this something that Referee Kinney came up with, this amount?
Absolutely, Chief Justice.
And it was not requested by OLR in their complaint?
It was not requested in the complaint, nor was there ever any opportunity to argue that particular issue.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
We believe that the circumstances of these two representations are so critical to a review of this matter by the court that the court needs to consider all of the aspects of the representation as it looks at what is the appropriate level of discipline in this proceeding. We also submit to you that the order from the referee for the return of fees to Larson and the charging of interest are issues that are beyond this proceeding, that the referee did not afford an opportunity for the parties to argue about it, to provide appropriate due process for those issues. We also submit to you that the cost for this proceeding should be reduced because of the way in which the Office of Lawyer Regulation has pursued so many.
Counsel, have you asked for a statement of the costs so that we know how come there's, $24,209? Have you asked for a statement so we know where that money went to?
Yes, we have received a statement.
Okay.
And I thought it was in the record, Chief Justice.
Well, it may be. It may be. Is it the whole bundle of $24,209 you object to, or are there particularized parts of the cost to which you object?
We believe that the costs need to be adjusted based upon the length of time in which this case and the number of issues that were pursued by the Office of Lawyer Regulation, but never became part of the final proceedings. If I may, Justices.
Yeah, sure.
Every situation in the representation is different. Here, Attorney Drock was faced with two life and death situations. What he did in each of these situations was address the objectives of the client in the most effective and efficient way possible based upon the changed circumstances. To now find that he should be publicly reprimanded for using his best judgment in dealing with his clients. In both cases, he went and talked to the clients. This is not a case that this court has seen where lawyers take money and put it into their business account and fail to comply with the notice requirements to give to the client. This is a case where the monies are based on flat fees, and this is a case where the lawyer talked to each client about the fees and how the fees would be paid out. Attorneys are human. Clients are human. Fact situations vary. These circumstances do not warrant the issuance of a public reprimand to Attorney Drock. They warrant the issuance of a private reprimand to Attorney Drock, and fees should be reduced, or the costs of this proceeding should be reduced.
To how much?
By 50%, Chief Justice, would be our position.
Why 50%, Attorney Dietrich?
What is clear in some of the back record of this case is the fact that the Office of Lawyer Regulation brought forward a huge number of counts originally against Attorney Drock. More than 50%, at least my position is, more than 50% of which were not pursued after an investigation and after the proceedings were started. As you can see, the complaint was significantly reduced from the original allegations brought against Attorney Drock. That's what we would submit would be fair. We believe that progressive discipline in this case is stale, and a private reprimand is the appropriate discipline to be given to Attorney Drock.
Thank you. Attorney Weigel, are you prepared to proceed for OLR?
Yes, Chief Justice, thank you.
Please.
Good afternoon, Chief and Justices, and Attorney Dietrich. I'm Bill Weigel. I've served as litigation counsel for OLR for quite some time. I'm representing OLR today, Attorney Brenda Sunby, an excellent trial attorney from the Wausau Merrill area, prosecuted this case under OLR's supervision throughout trial. Into appellate briefing, she encountered a health issue. She retired. You stuck with me, but it's always been an honor and a pleasure to have the opportunity to discuss attorney discipline cases with the court at oral argument. This appeal and cross appeal present four issues for your decision at most. The level of discipline, the court's referee, Judge Kinney, determined a public reprimand to be the most appropriate level to impose. The level of discipline, as Attorney Dietrich pointed out, is really, I think, the crux of this appeal. Another issue is OLR's cross appeal on an issue of law. Attorney Drock stipulated that his conduct violated the rule prohibiting the charging and collecting of an unreasonable fee, SCR 20:1.5A, count one. The referee at the outset of the hearing stated that the violation was conclusively presumed, but in his report decided otherwise. OLR respectfully believes that legal analysis was flawed. How you decide the unreasonable fee issue should not affect the level of discipline. There's the question of restitution, and I can flesh that out or respond to questions. Do you order restitution really as stipulated by the parties and sought by OLR, or restitution plus as recommended by the referee based on information in the record? And costs. The court's general policy and rule indicates it is to impose full costs where misconduct is found. The referee recommended full costs be imposed, finding all of the costs of the litigation were reasonable and were necessarily incurred. You know, the issue of costs is just entirely in the court's discretion. I primarily, as Attorney Dietrich did, want to focus on why a public reprimand is appropriate. This is not a case of such serious professional misconduct that it requires a suspension. OLR never sought a suspension, but under the circumstances, the misconduct here is not de minimis. The referee you appointed, he's an experienced circuit court judge. He participated in Attorney Drock's case for 17 months. He spent more time on this case than even OLR's counsel. You'll see from the itemization that OLR did file with the court provide to Attorney Dietrich. He presided over a four-hour hearing at which Attorney Drock was the sole witness. Referees in lawyer regulation cases are your eyes and ears, and he had the opportunity to observe Attorney Drock firsthand, to make credibility determinations. He considered the arguments on sanction pretty much the same as the arguments the parties have provided you on appeal, and he filed a clear, supported recommendation for a public reprimand. OLR believes there are more than a handful, probably seven or eight factors, which weigh in favor of public discipline. There are multiple violations, not because the case was overcharged. Attorney Dietrich apparently was making some allusion to the district committee investigation, but OLR charged a four-count case. OLR charged, I think it was nine instances of misconduct or so. Those are the violations for which the Preliminary Review Committee, PRC, found cause to proceed. We only charge what the PRC finds cause to proceed. We charge them within only four counts, not nine, because it seemed to be a natural grouping and because we did not want it to appear that the case was any worse than it was. This is reprimand level, public reprimand level discipline. And as far as whether or not we overcharged or over-litigated, Attorney Drock stipulated to every misconduct count charged, including count one. In the stipulation number 63, he says, I represent and verify. My entry into this stip represents admission of the facts and all of the misconduct. So in part because there's multiple rule violations, but for a number of other reasons, this is a public reprimand case. This attorney has prior discipline. Twice before, Attorney Drock was reprimanded for professional misconduct. And there does seem a bit of a pattern. One of the prior reprimands involving Attorney Drock not having procedures in place for his staff, not properly supervising his staff. And in this case, he has deflected or projected blame upon his employees as found by the referee. So the fact of prior discipline, including some similar behaviors, supports a public reprimand. I agree that the prior discipline was somewhat remote in time. That can be taken into account. If you've got a criminal sentencing before you, you look at somebody's record, it may or may not be particularly impactful upon what you do in the case immediately before you. But there is not a lot of attorneys who have two or three instances of professional misconduct. There's a pattern within this case of attorney Drock not conforming to the court's rules that protect clients. They are not the drastic rules. He was not cheating. He was not intentionally trying to bilk them out of money. But what he was doing is not de minimis. The reason timely notice of withdrawal of funds from a trust account and providing a client the accounting of the funds that you are holding that are their funds in your trust account is to protect the clients. And it's to avoid situations that we ran into here where then, years after the fact, when being prosecuted for some of these rule violations, you come up with oral evidence saying, well, we told him this year and one of my people told him that there and they obviously knew this because Teely used to work for me. I mean, these are protection of the client type of rules. And these clients were vulnerable. The referee mentions they're vulnerable because they're elderly. And I at least have a lot of snow on the roof, so I'm taking a little exception to that. But in Pashulk, Attorney Drock withdrew about $23,000 in the space of a month and a half. He was trying to divest Ray Sr. of assets to make him eligible for Medicaid. Ray Jr., who he's dealing with, is not sophisticated. Even Attorney Drock described Ray Jr. as Ray lived with his parents his entire life. At the time, he's maybe 55. As far as I know, he was never self-supporting. Ray Sr. and Anita covered his living expenses all of these years. Page 46 of the transcript, at page 107, Attorney Drock said, if the definition of vulnerability means you have a son who has relied on his mother for 55 or more years to provide funds to cover his living expenses, yes, I think he was vulnerable. Another reason this case is meriting of public discipline is the clients suffered harm. It's self-evident that when an attorney is found to have wrongfully charged a client and restitution is determined to be owed, I mean, there must have been some harm. And in Pashulk, OLR sought restitution. Attorney Drock agreed to it. The referee recommended it, said you should pay it immediately. And then after the referee's report, Attorney Drock, through Attorney Dietrich, forwarded the money to Ray Pashulk Jr., not including the interest. Another aggravating factor, or a factor at least weighing toward public rather than private discipline, is that the referee found Attorney Drock deflected and did not take responsibility, so that he diverts attention from the plain language of the rules. What he focuses on is largely diversionary, that Attorney Drock seemed oblivious to the wrongfulness of his behavior, that any expressions of regret or remorse were conspicuous by their absence. And failure to take full responsibility goes to one of the goals of attorney discipline, to impress upon the attorney the wrongfulness of his conduct. Primarily, one of the reasons that a public discipline is appropriate is a private reprimand is not going to serve the goals of attorney discipline. The sanction the court imposes should impress on Attorney Drock the seriousness of his repeated misconduct, but it should also deter other attorneys from committing similar misconduct. A private reprimand will do little or nothing to teach and deter other attorneys from engaging in similar misconduct. Attorney Drock did not fail to cooperate during the investigation. Attorney Drock did stipulate to his misconduct, but I'll remind you, he did that at the 11th hour. I mean, this case was pending for a long time. In his answer, he denied all misconduct and requested dismissal. In his amended answer, he denied all misconduct and requested dismissal. Exactly 2 weeks before the hearing, he stipulated to the misconduct, which is the same misconduct OLR originally charged. Again, I'll just quickly divert. Attorney Dietrich mentioned it in the context of costs into this charging. OLR brought charges, and 17 or 18 months later, Attorney Drock stipulated to those charges. Nothing more was placed at issue in this proceeding. Attorney Drock argues the violations are de minimis. Your referee discussed this for probably 7-8 pages, pages 12 to 20 of his report. and rejected that defense or explanation. Now, again, coming on kind of heavy, these misconduct violations, these are not the crimes of the century. They did not involve dishonesty. They aren't intentional cheating. But that doesn't mean his misconduct should somehow be swept under a rug. Guidance in assessing what is and what is not de minimis is found in the court's own rule. And in a comment to the rule, there's a definitional rule, SCR 22.001. One of the definitions, sub 2, is cause to proceed. Basically, gives OLR some discretion not to proceed on rule violations if it really just doesn't matter, if it's de minimis, and gives the preliminary review committee, the PRC, reason not to find cause to proceed if it's de minimis. And the one comment to that rule that gives some guidance as to what is or is not de minimis talks about factors such as whether the attorney acknowledges the violation. Well, here he did, but at the 11th hour. Whether the violation caused harm, here it did. Whether the attorney has remediated any harm, he did in the latter half of 2019 pay the amount the referee suggested he pay to Ray Paschal Jr. Whether the violation is part of a pattern or repeated misconduct, and OLR submits that it is.
Counsel, before you move on, I want to chat with you a little bit about the $1,204 that is set up in the materials I've read as a repayment due on the Larson bill. And it was Attorney Dietrich's statement that OLR didn't request that. Nobody argued about that at the hearing, that this is something that referee Kinney came up with. Is that your recollection as well?
That's my understanding of the record. OLR did not request restitution in the Larson matter in its complaint or throughout the proceeding. It did so, and we filed a restitution statement explaining this, because during OLR's investigation, it was determined that any amount was not reasonably ascertainable, and so it did not fit OLR's restitution policy. Because of the de minimis arguments made by Attorney Dietrich, OLR's counsel, Attorney Sunby, set forth some of the figures with regard to a comparison of the rate that was recited to the client, Goldie Larson, and the rate that was actually charged. The referee made a calculation and put a number on it. Yes, we were surprised that there was that restitution recommendation. What the court does with regard to that, or with regard to his recommendations that interest accrue on the restitution amounts, is really just within the discretion of the court.
Well, if the court were going to apply post-judgment interest, we have a statute that tells us what to do. We don't just pick 18% because it's what appears on my bill from Macy's, right?
Well,
so, anyway, I'm less concerned about that than I am about whether or not there was an opportunity to address the $1,204 that we are now told is due to the Larsons. So.
Yeah, there was, I'm sure that the restitution to the Larsons and the interest recommendation were surprises to both parties, just as the recommendation that the 1.5A stipulated count be dismissed was a surprise and was not addressed or argued by the parties.
Okay, thank you.
Attorney Weigel, will you address Attorney Dietrich's argument about costs should only be 50% because we started out with 9 counts and now OLR only prosecuted 4 and now we're actually only dealing with 3 potentially. What's your response to that argument about the cost?
I have to backtrack a little. OLR started out with 4 counts. Within those 4 counts, there are something like 9 rule violations. For instance, a count may say Drock did A and Drock did B and Drock did C, and in each instance, that conduct violated a rule. So that's why there were roughly 9 instances of rule violations. That's what OLR charged. Attorney Drock stipulated to all of them. The only one that's not at issue anymore is that the referee found that count 1 of those 9 rule violations, should be dismissed because he created an analysis of the rule that OLR respectfully submits is flawed. So I also would say that the court has traditionally declined to apportion costs based upon the number of counts charged or proven. Yes, you have done so. Frankly, you can come up with cases that support almost any proposition in the lawyer regulation rule. But generally, the court has oft stated it's going to decline to apportion costs. Costs, OLR, it's not a big deal. It's just that SCR 2224 is your cost rule. You have a policy. We made a recommendation, and what you do is up to you. The decision is really, do you impose costs on the attorney who committed misconduct or pro rata on every single member of the state bar that pays dues?
Well, I think one thing about the cost, counsel, is they're very, very high for a small complaint. And they're very high for someone that's not charged with dishonesty or theft or a more egregious kind of conduct. And that's, the bill is quite high. So I haven't studied the bill of costs, but it is in the record, and I will do so before we decide what to do.
Sure. You know, I'll just point out that even that the costs are seldom correlative to the amount of or the severity of the misconduct. There's a lot of cheaters and stealers out there, and maybe they give up the ghost, and the costs are fairly low. There are people who are private reprimand cases where that's all we're seeking, and they fight like heck. And there are many more tens of thousands of dollars of costs than you see in this case. Again, I would point out that the referee's time is more than OLR's time. And contrary to what Attorney Dietrich seems to want to argue here, and not his fault, but maybe a misunderstanding, OLR charges zero for investigative costs. Zero. OLR charges zero for the district committee. OLR charges zero for supervising the litigation. We only charge the cost of the prosecution, the time of Attorney Sunby, and now for preparation for the oral argument, we'll submit another supplemental statement of costs. Don't know exactly what I'm worth because I haven't calculated it, but there will be a couple more dollars that we'll ask the court to consider imposing.
Thank you.
Sure. Again, I'm happy to talk about the restitution. I'm happy to talk about the 1.5A cross appeal or public or private discipline. I'm mindful that this is not the case of the century, and the court's been listening to oral arguments all day. So it is any curiosity that you have and any issues or questions you want me to address rather than me blurting out argument at you.
Could you address Attorney Dietrich's statement? I think it was one of the, pretty much the first argument he made regarding the progressive discipline, and that progressive discipline was not appropriate in this case, number one, because the two previous cases are a while ago. One, he was disciplined in 2002, and one, 2008, and that the conduct itself was different. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Justice Grofsky. Well, the conduct in every attorney regulation case I'll submit is different. No case is on all four square with any other case. And I agree, OLR agrees, that the prior discipline is somewhat remote in time. Not entirely remote, but somewhat remote in time. And there are some parallels with regard to the not having procedures in place or blaming employees, but they aren't the same rule violations. That isn't to say that the prior discipline should be entirely disregarded. OLR did not hang its hat on progressive discipline. I argued to this court 6, 7, 8 factors, I think, all of which weigh in favor of public discipline. Frankly, I hardly argued the progressive discipline. It's just another aggravating factor in a couple of handfuls of aggravating factors here. I guess to some, you can't ignore and should not ignore the prior record just because it happened a while ago, but it's not compelling and dispositive either. Justice Kurofsky.
Any other questions from the court? Attorney Dietrich, rebuttal? Your microphone is muted. Attorney Dietrich, you get, maybe I can do that for you.
There we go. Can you hear me okay?
Good. Thank you.
There are 4 points that I wish to bring forward to the court in response. First, OLR raises a concern about communication with Ray Jr. and says that there was not written communication of the amount of monies that were in the trust account and how those monies were going to be expended on behalf of the client. The record has a 5-page letter from the associate attorney to Ray Jr. The sequence is a meeting in mid-December, roughly December 14th, a letter sent out December 18th, and the funds withdrawn from the trust account 5 days later. OLR is apparently not happy with a 5-page letter that Attorney Drock sent to that client. That was Ray Jr., the trustee. The record also shows that Attorney Drock has a very strong practice of communicating with clients at each step of the process. And I think that to suggest that there's a failure to disclose information is simply not sufficient under the record before us in these two cases. OLR talks about the first count that the referee dismissed. The referee did an analysis regarding 20:1.5A. What is really important for this court to consider is the arguments made by the Office of Lawyer Regulation to the court that Attorney Drock engaged in, quote, double billing. The words double billing are very offensive words. And in today's world of social media, to be accused of double billing by the briefing and the arguments to this court are inappropriate and not based on fact. What the record shows is that certain entries were billed under the hourly rate billing matter instead of under the flat fee billing matter. And when that was acknowledged, when that was pointed out, agreement was reached immediately to reimburse those monies to client Ray Sr. That is not double billing. And double billing, as I said, is something that I think is very inappropriate to be as suggested under those facts. What I heard from Mr. Weigel was there's a span of time between the filing of the complaint and entering into the stipulation. I hope that the Office of Lawyer Regulation is not suggesting, and I hope that this court is not assuming, that because a lawyer disagrees with the allegations being made and therefore challenges that through the process or parts of the process, that should now become a basis for more discipline. I don't think that's what OLR is suggesting, at least I hope not. The parties entered into a stipulation because of the nature of the case, because of the facts that had been brought out by both sides, and because the issue here is exercising proper discretion in representing a client.
Thank you. Thank you, Attorney Dietrich. Well, before we conclude, I want to be sure that our record notes that the court sits only six today. Justice Ann Walsh Bradley has not participated and will not participate in any part of this. My thanks and the court's thanks to both counsel for helping us with this oral argument. I know it's a little bit different to do things by Zoom, and some of us are getting a little zoomed out, but you both did a very good job. Your briefs were very helpful to the court. So I thank you all. We are going to conclude now, and the court will meet in closed conference at 10 minutes to 3. Thank you. We are adjourned.
Thank you.